Good morning. Basically, we are here today because we already believe. But every year, the percentage goes up of those that we deal with in daily life who aren't properly educated about God as a child, and they either don't believe God exists at all, or they have a total misunderstanding of Him. Today, I want to give you an example of God's creation bearing witness for Him, that we might be a little better prepared to fulfill 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15, which we had in our class this morning, and give an answer to those who question, why do you believe? Why should I believe? In Psalms 139, verse 14, it reads and says, I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. And in Isaiah 55, verse 9, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. There are some things in life that we won't ever totally understand. We won't get it until we get to see the Lord face to face, because the Lord's ways are beyond human logic. The decisions that He makes, the things that He has declared just, we may not totally get while we're here in this body. There's a song in the Red Book that has a verse in it that some people are a little uncomfortable with. I think it's number 321 at the cross, and I think the first verse ends with the phrase, for such a worm as I. And it makes some people a little uncomfortable with that phrase. And let's assume that the phrase is okay. Does it mean that if we start out in life as a worm, do we have to stay a worm? And so hopefully through the course of this talk, we can answer that question. You know, life changes all of us. Some changes are good, some changes are bad. None of us have to stay a worm. And I'm going to tell you a story today that was, it's information that was discovered after I graduated. At least that's the way I interpreted the documentary that I listened to. And so hopefully this story I'm going to give you about God's creation will be something that may be possibly new to at least part of you. And so if we were to play a game today of fact or fiction, and I was to tell you a story, and you're on the other team, and you have to decide whether the story I told you was the truth, or whether it's fiction, something I just made up, I would be willing to bet that the majority of you would say that the story I'm going to tell you was fiction, when in fact it is fact. And it's very intriguing, and Joyce and I watched this documentary on Channel 11 and found it very stunning, some of the things that it revealed. So kids, maybe you can listen to this and learn something that you can surprise your friends with. Maybe you already know some of these things I'm going to bring up. When I mentioned the word migration, migrating. What do you think of? Waterfowl, ducks and geese. That's the first thing that oftentimes comes to mind. All right, Joyce is a hummingbird. Okay, but we're not, that's not what this particular lesson is about. But it is about migration. But it's not waterfowl migrating, it's not hummingbirds migrating, it's something else. Something you may not have even realized that migrates. When we look at nature and the way all of its things interact or interwoven, and if you were to just be a biologist and just study the mating rituals of the animal kingdom, you could give lessons for the rest of your life on what you observe that all of God's creations go through in order to mate. That's not what this lesson's about either. But oftentimes at this time of the year, we hear about how I heard a guy talking on the radio yesterday that he was trying to entice a tom turkey to come into him for a closer shot. But he had five hens around him, and he wasn't really interested in the noises that he was making. And we hear the stories about the swallows of Capistrano, and the loons, I guess, have some kind of elegant ritual that they go through. And I can't remember whether it's a black widow or the tarantula spider. When they mate, when they're done, the female eats the male. So there are all kinds of bizarre things that happen in the animal world. The thing that we're going to talk about today, this creature starts out as a worm, in my eyes. Others would call it a caterpillar. I call caterpillars a form of a worm. And so the first miraculous thing about this creature that testifies that there is a God is the fact that if you ever watch any of the space adventures of back in the 1990s, there was one show that had a character that was called a shapeshifter. He could make himself into other objects, other beings that he wasn't at all. Well, when you look at this caterpillar, you would have to say that it's a shapeshifter because it starts off life as a worm. It goes into cocoon, and it comes out with wings, legs, an antenna. It never had before it went into that cocoon. And this caterpillar becomes a monarch butterfly. And if you have any interest in this story when we're done, we have this recorded if you'd like to see it someday. But so how do we bring in monarch butterflies in with waterfowl? It's been discovered that monarch butterflies migrate. How many people knew that? We were amazed at the details of it. That this wasn't, some of the details weren't confirmed until 1975, when they discovered, after tagging, putting little tiny labels on some of these monarchs that were up in Canada, that they ended up down in Mexico. And that was the first proof that scientists had of how great this event is. And so we're going to look at some of the details of this, and in the end, tell me there is no God. The monarchs that were studied basically came from Canada and the northeastern United States, a trip of almost 2,000 miles to where their destination was in Missouri. Or in Mexico. There is a Mexico in Missouri, but it's way beyond that one. And I think about nature and the things that are made fun of because they have small brains and basically alligators and sharks and ostriches are three things that come to mind. Maybe the ostrich has a brain the size of a pea. And you think about a monarch butterfly and how tiny they are. You're talking about a few brain cells. I'm not sure if they even have what you would classify as a brain as we think of it. And they start off on this long flight to a place they have never been. They will only go to once. A place they have never seen. They encounter deserts, they encounter mountains, and they encounter bodies of water, which any of them can destroy their journey. But they arrive in the Mexican mountains every year at the same time, the same place, in an area that covers about 60 square miles at an elevation of 10,000 feet. And I think 60 square miles is, if it was 6 feet or 6 miles by 10 miles, that's the approximate, that's fairly close to the size of the Des Moines metropolitan area, not counting the outer suburbs. Because I think from the east mixed master to the west mixed master, it's probably about 10 miles east to west. So it's not a very big area. And 100 million of these butterflies find that same geographical area, starting out from Canada and northeastern United States. The ones that come from Canada have to go across Lake Huron in the late August. And so the body of water itself eliminates many. But before we get to that, the caterpillar, when it starts out, or the worm as I referred to it, it grows four different times and sheds its skin four different times before it ever becomes into a cocoon to become a butterfly. And so that fifth time is when the caterpillar disappears and it transforms into something else. 10 days later, the change is complete, and a butterfly with four wings, legs, antennae, and eyes come out. And so each year, the numbers are getting smaller, but 100 million is what is estimated migrated. And so they have about 2,000 miles to cover in 2 months, which means they have to travel 50 miles a day. How does a butterfly that weighs... anybody got an idea what a butterfly weighs? 1/5 of 1 ounce. That's what a monarch weighs. And so how do you have enough energy to fly 2,000 miles if you only weigh 1/5 of 1 ounce? It's not really possible. So the people that have studied this have found that there are air currents as air rises, and these butterflies, if they're gliding, don't use up their energy. And so get into the wind stream as the warmer air rises, and they're able to glide on a big part of their trip. But the most amazing part about this that I heard is that right now the butterflies that spent the winter in Mexico have started their way back up already. But they will only go up to the Gulf states, and they will mate and die. And they'll produce a second generation that will first be caterpillars, then they transform butterflies, and they live for 30 days, and they fly part of the trip back up north. And they get to the northern United States, where they mate and die after a life of 30 days. A third generation is born, and they complete the last leg going north, and they'll end up in Canada and the northeast United States, where they also will live 30 days and die. And the fourth generation, they live 9 months. So how does the fourth generation know, or how do they survive 9 months when the other generation only lived one? There is no explanation scientifically how this is possible. What makes them know what the time is when they should leave Canada and the northeastern United States for a 2,000-mile trip? Freshly hatched, they've never flown a long distance, and yet man would call it nature, tells them that it's time to go. They've never figured out what do they go by. How do they know which direction they're flying? Do they follow the streams? Do they follow the sun? Do they fly the St. Louis Arch and just make a turn south? There is no logical explanation. With a wingspan under 4 inches and weighing less than a fifth of an ounce, something so tiny has scientists with no answers. They only fly when the conditions are perfect. If it's too cold, it makes them too sluggish and their wings won't work. If it's too hot, they have to stop so they don't overheat. And they have to stop for nectar and water along the way and present themselves to their natural enemies. If it's bad weather, it's too wet. And science, if you've heard this story before, science says that a butterfly has the worst possible design for wings for anything that's going to fly a long distance. And I wondered when they said that if it was the same scientist that said bumblebees shouldn't be able to fly. So oftentimes man's logic or knowledge base about what is logical, as I opened there with our lesson that my ways are higher than your ways and my thoughts than your thoughts. Man doesn't understand everything about life forms that he would like us to believe. And so this is a freak of nature that scientists have no explanation for. So the first miraculous thing that this last generation of butterflies does is they find a way to get across the Great Lakes. Bodies of water that are 100 miles wide. And they fly to a destination that's 60 square miles, 10,000 feet high in the mountains, about the size of Des Moines, and 100 million of them get there at the same time every year. It was only in 1975, as I mentioned, that this was discovered, that butterflies from Canada make it to Mexico. And there were 12 specific sites in this 60-mile radius, or 60-mile square area that they grew up in. And it's the only destination in the world that they go to. There are other butterflies that occur in warmer areas that don't migrate, but these monarchs that occur in Canada and the United States all go to this one spot in 60 square miles, which I find unbelievable. Especially when you compare it to our generation today, who is accustomed to GPS, and these butterflies come out of their cocoon and they make a 2,000 mile trip to the south with no sense of direction, like many of us seem to be, but yet they do have a sense of direction because they are able to get there. And so the scientists performed an experiment to see just how this was. And they captured a group of butterflies in Kansas and took them to Washington, D.C. and tagged them. And then they released them. And for 2 days, the butterflies flew straight south as though they were still in Kansas. And then something told them it wasn't right, and they made correction and ended up in Mexico. And so something that just has a few brain cells, not something the size of a pea, they have an intuition without any parental educating taking place. It is given to them by God, the ability to do something that scientists have no way of figuring out how this can possibly occur. Whether they take celestial information or magnetic information from the earth, the Lord has programmed things into every form of life that make it unique. That He has put His fingerprint on, that identify it as being a product of a higher being. And when man studies more and more about the life forms, he realizes that he can't pick up a handful of dust and blow into it the breath of life in the way that God has done. And the Lord has His creation, if we are observant enough, testifying each day that there is a God. In mid-October, when these butterflies are all on their way down at the Mexico border, the flock, they all get there at the border about the same time, and they say the flock is 50 miles wide. It took them 6 weeks to get there from Canada. And then they have to face a 100-mile stretch of desert in Mexico before they can get to the mountains. And for 5 months, they hang in clusters in the trees in Mexico. And now there's a problem in Mexico with illegal logging taking place in this 60-mile window to where monarchs may never survive. And they don't know whether there's any way that they can adapt to these changes that man is doing. Mexico has made it illegal to log in this area for years, but they can't seem to stop it. So we have a miraculous transition in nature of one creature becoming another, from this caterpillar evolving into something able to fly. A lowly worm becomes one of the most beautiful flying things on earth. And how does it even know how to fly? God gives it the intuition to know. We as Christians can start off in the lowest point in life. We can be down on our luck to the point where people may look at us as a worm. But when we allow the Lord to come into our life and acknowledge the Creator, we can come out of our cocoon and become something that the Lord can use in His work. We can become productive for the Creator, and as the monarch butterfly testifies there is a God, when we change and transition our own lives to be Christ-like, we also can testify through our own lives there is a God. So once we evolve from a worm to being something God can use, now He can save us. But we have to make that transition to put on our wings and become something that we weren't at the beginning. And man studies life forms on earth that they are so different, so diverse, and so many different forms of life. Godly slowly reveals to us all life's interacting forms, that if you are paying attention, you can't help believe there is a God if you be aware of your surroundings. Instead of being glued to your smartphone or your GPS to get you where you are going, or your calculator to do your math instead of doing it in your head, someday you will realize how vulnerable you are. A little over 1 to 2 years ago, our Secretary of Defense, or else one of the military top brass, I don't remember which man it was interviewed on, was giving a speech that was on the news. And he made a prediction that the next Pearl Harbor would not be an actual harbor, but it would occur in cyberspace. He said that the next giant world conflict will start in cyberspace, shutting down the internet, shutting down the cell phones, and all normal forms of communication. And every day, the hackers from China and Russia are trying to get into the government computers. And when this event finally does happen, this military man indicated that it will happen. It's a matter of when. That a large number of the young people that are so dependent, and I shouldn't say just young people because it includes many, that have made themselves so dependent on GPS that if they're across town when this happens, I wonder if they can make it home. We become a society that is so dependent upon technology to think for us that when when a day of difficulty arises, will we be able to even function in a way to save ourselves? One of my cousins that retired recently from the military, I asked him about a bomb device that Paul Zinnel and I had talked about. And I asked him if it was real. And I may not totally be accurate. I can't remember the phrase that he used to describe it. It had a name. I'm sure Tim knows what it is. But we just refer to it as a magnetic force field bomb that is detonated in the atmosphere. And it basically disables anything that's computer-oriented. And I asked him if that really existed. And he says, oh, yeah. He says, those are the first planes that went into Iraq to knock out the radar. And he was telling me a story that while he was in the military, that they have to train extensively with these planes in order to where they can fight like they train. And that there is a disabling device on these planes, so when they are training, they don't accidentally engage that. And he was telling me about a time when he was in the military on the West Coast, and one of the pilots didn't get his machine totally disengaged, and it activated while he was just off the West Coast, and it disabled two of the power plants out there and caused a brownout on the West Coast. So the technology is already there, and I'd also heard that within 5 years there will be a form of this that the police will have, that when a driver refuses to stop, that they will be able to disable an individual car with this technology. They can do it to a degree now with the OnStar stuff that is on General Motors products. But the Lord has placed secrets all throughout His creation that when you uncover them, they leave you without a doubt that there is a God. And hopefully this small example we've used today can help us be reminded of that. And Psalms 139:14 tells us we are fearfully and wonderfully made. So it's really your choice today when you leave here, if you stay in the state that you're at, whether that be a state of hibernation or whether you're referred to as maybe a worm by some. Do you stay in that? Do you choose to stay there, being only a consumer? Or do you come out of your cocoon a new creature, being able to testify of your Creator? Beautiful, mysterious, representing your Creator to others is what the Lord would have us to be. This is the day that the Lord hath made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. I started off asking you a question. These creatures that we talked about, their lives testify to a Creator. Does your life testify to a Creator in the way that is beneficial to God? We give you this opportunity to make a transition, to come out of your cocoon while we stand and sing.